cometh the hour, cometh the mothership. That is Coast to Coast AM from its undisclosable location for reasons of security and therefore insecurity. Oh boy, I'm not kidding you either. Well, I would say good evening, but unless you're on the podcast, it's not evening. It's the middle of the night. So good night and good grief. How are you? This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM, and I got to tell you, I think we've got a good one for you tonight. In the first hour, we will visit with our friend Chuck Bergman, psychic cop. We're going to talk about a variety of things, including Philip Marshall and Sandy Hook. And whatever else comes up. And then, first time for me to actually speak with him personally, but it's not the first time I've heard him, nor the first time you have heard him. And that would be an interview with Whitley Strieber. We're going to talk with him tonight about how all of these things, these crop circles, these cattle mutilations, UFO sightings, alien abductions, near-death experiences, how the visitors connect with this. And it'll be a rollicking good time. I'm doing my best to contain myself because I got to tell you, I am irate. I'm almost livid. Almost livid. How about that little guy, Kim Jong-un? I think Kim Jong-un needs a caning, you know? Bend him over like the old days when the PE coach would give you a paddling. Only use about a 6 foot long cane and cane his backside so hard that he has to change his name to Kim Jong. Ow, ow, you know, like Private Pile when they put the soap in the socks and just wailed on him. He's going, ow, ow. That thing, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Is that sadistic? Good. Because this guy is some kind of a piece of work, expecting a potential nuclear. What could be more stupid? And what could be more crazy? But could look for it as early as next Wednesday. In the meantime, the embassies are supposed to be empty before close of business on Wednesday. And simultaneously, of course, Russia is just finished conducting simulated cruise missile strikes against U.S. targets in Asia. That's always comforting. And it just goes on and on and on. It really, really does, doesn't it? ATF, that's the old Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, seeks massive database of personal info, assets, relatives, associates, and more. Yeah, that's that Facebook thing again. All these friends that you have on Facebook, well, I've said it before, I shall say it again. I would advise against it. And I'll tell you why. Because there is no one that you can go to for help in times of trouble that they don't know about. Because everybody's friends now on Facebook, so... Isn't it funny how these friendly, seemingly friendly and innocuous little things turn into tools for them? Speaking of them, I mean, it's just all over the place. The next target for the Obama administration would be retirement accounts. Look it up. Check it out. 663,000 people dropped out of the workforce. The true unemployment level in this country is probably, if truth were told, around 17. Now, I was just listening to Mr. Bell, Art Bell, somewhere in time on a show from July 17, 1996. And during the course of the interview with a presidential candidate who was running on the Libertarian ticket way back there, almost when, well, certainly horny toads roamed the earth. Haven't seen those in a while. Certainly not since 97. Mr. Bell declared that he was probably more libertarian than Republican, but whatever. So, you know, you'll have to excuse me if I contradict those who say that Coast is not about politics. Coast is, let me remind you, gentle listeners, there are no boundaries at Coast to Coast AM, only the boundaries of civility, hopefully. But then again, that's conditional. You know, that Trojan virus that tore up all those Macintosh computers last year. Get this. This is something else. The remote region of Mordovia. It is in Russia. Famed for its prison camps, may be the home of the author of the most notorious malware ever to hit Mac computers. This comes from Naked Security. a very good little service. You might look into it. The flashback malware hit more than 600,000 Mac computers in early 12, posing as a bogus installer for Adobe Flash and exploiting an unpatched vulnerability in Java. But anyway, award-winning security blogger Brian Krebs wrote on April 3rd about his investigation into who might have been behind Flashback. His investigation took him to Russian language forums belonging to the computer underground, where he found a user called Mavuk, claiming to be the author of Flashback and saying that he specialized in finding security exploits and creating botnets. Combing the net for further information and digging through historic website registration records, Mr. Krebs went on to link Mavuk with Maxim Silanovich, a man in his 30s living in the city of Saransk in Mordovia. I can just hear it now. Mordovia. I've never been there, but I can imagine this scenario. A strange town. You know, time on hands. I did not intend to make Trojan. Really, I was bored. Drank vodka, which made me mean. A few lost hours later, Mac attack occurred. It was not me which did this thing. It was vodka. I get it. I'd say the NSA has a job for you, but I suspect the FSB has already offered you one and offered it to you in a manner which you really couldn't refuse. Now, I mentioned I was livid. Let me tell you what I'm livid about. I went over to InfoWars and looked at this. MSNBC host, your kids belong to the collective. Now, if you have kids, this will make you absolutely nuts. This is a quote. This is a quote from host Melissa Harris Perry. We have to break through our private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, says the professor of political science at Tulane University, where she's founding director of the Anna Julia Cooper Project on Gender, Race, and Politics in the South. Hallelujah. Cumberland. Kids belong to a whole community, she insists, and once we realize this, we'll make better investments in government indoctrination of children. Like most people of this ideological bent, our current president either cannot or will not distinguish between society, which is created through peaceful commerce and other forms of private cooperation, and the states, an antisocial artifact built on conquest, coercion, and confiscation of wealth, writes William Grigg. Government produces nothing. It is an exercise in pure consumption and usually the destruction of capital. As Friedrich Nietzsche famously said, everything the state has is stolen. Look out now, because they're just getting started. And as long as, and then we'll depart the political thing, but our vice president has actually called for a new world order and used those words. On Friday, he shockingly declared, quote, the affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order. The affirmation task. Because the global order is changing again, and the institutions of the world worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened, and some need to be changed. And in the meantime, there's a rumor running around that the Secret Service may decide to arrest some of these Colorado sheriffs. They're going to start with them for not enforcing these new gun laws. So we shall see. But here's the thing. You better get involved, and you better get involved quick, or you better resign yourself to a future you cannot have possibly imagined outside the confines of your den while watching a scenario unfold on the television that you could switch off and just make it go away. This is not going away. It is getting stronger. The people who are for it are getting more strident, and we had better gird up and get ready, because, well, I think we can save it, but I think we're going to get messy on this one. That's just me. Now, on a slightly lighter note, this comes from one of my favorite little websites. It's called Full Spectrum Dominance. Discovery of a 17th century Spanish shipwreck yields an awesome, awesome treasure. It's a long story, but basically the findings are a reflection of the dazzling wealth of Spain's colonial outposts. More than 6,000 pearls, some of which were the diameter of a nickel when harvested, silver coins bearing Spain's imperial stamp, bars of almost pure gold, and long strands of glittering gold necklaces. You can read the whole article at fullspectrumdominance.com. Put dashes between full and spectrum and a dash between spectrum and dominance, and you'll have it. And then, don't miss this. This is outrageous. On the Coast to Coast AM website, a new giant spider discovered. Now, this is from the British Tarantula Society, and so tarantula is slightly different from a traditional spider, but not by much. This thing is hideous, and it's the size of your face. A face-sized spider. Scientists are working on a fusion rocket for Mars. Bees are actually capable of deductive reasoning. And will the CDC's bird flu vaccine work if the virus mutates? I'm not a doctor, but I'm thinking not. If it mutates, it means it becomes something else. So therefore, wouldn't that render the virus useless? Well, as the Zen master says, we'll see. Coming up next. And first, Chuck Bergman's Psychic Cop. It all starts rolling on the count of one. One. All right, his website is chuckbergman.com, chuckbergman.com. His books are The Psychic Cop and another one, The Everything Guide to Evidence of the Afterlife. He's a retired Salem, Massachusetts police officer, third-generation medium, and recalls being able to communicate with the other side since the age of SACE. That's six. Okay. He spent many years in development circles learning meditation techniques that have helped fine-tune his gift, completed classes in psychic mediumship, advanced mediumship, and Reiki. He's just finished his second book, which chronicles his life. And we welcome back to the program Chuck Bergman. How you doing?
John, how are you doing? I get to listen to you from time to time, but I got to tell you, it's such an honor to return to your show.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you back. What have you been doing? We spoke, not quite a year ago, last July. And it was quite an eye-opener. I know you freaked out. One of our producers, Nathan, said, John, Chuck just freaked me out so bad. He asked me about this leather belt. There's no way he could have known I was wearing a boxer's leather belt around my waist. So, and then the other stuff that we discussed, I'll tell you, it's undeniable. So tell me what you've been doing, and then let's get into some of these things that I'm just falling all over myself to ask you about.
Great. Yeah. Curious to see where the night's going to take us tonight. Things have been going very well for me. I have to admit, being on your show has opened many doors, and I've met a lot of great people because of it. And, you know, I've been a little more active out in the police world, helping with different cases that I'm able to help pretty much behind the scenes, but at least I'm coming up with information in a way that they can then add their facts to it and proceed in the right direction. I've helped with cases that I think could have been termed cold cases by now had I not jumped in and just given them what I get when I, you know, get into the zone that I get into.
Well, I don't suppose you can go into much detail if these cases are still under investigation, but I take it you're having some good result.
Very good results, really. And there's a side effect to it, too. In many cases, my choice of operation would be to work with the family, too, because I need the family around. It was like when I was on your show, I'll ask questions and then get validations to it, and find that I'm on the right track with stuff. And it would be amazing how, I know I did one recently, and I blurted out a name immediately, and it wasn't a common name, and I don't want to repeat it on the air, but when the detectives heard the name that I gave out, they dropped their ink pens, that's our number one suspect. How would Chuck know that? He just flew in, he's meeting with the parents now, and just blurted out, this is the guy that did it, and it was right on the money.
It's great to be validated like that. Well,
it is.
I'm sure they had the same effect on them that your comment on the belt had on Nathan. You know, before I even got into, okay, what shall we talk about tonight? A couple of the very first things that came to mind were, a friend of Coast to Coast AM, been on the program a couple of times, the 9/11 truth man and airline pilot Philip Marshall. I have never seen such an exhaustive bunch of information contained in the official report. I mean, there was more information about a divorce was on, divorce was off, medication this, medication that, phone calls made, quoting him, there's going to be a problem, which, of course, by the time I'd read all this, prompted the question in my mind of, okay, well, if all of this is true, then why were his kids there? Because it seems to me like it would have taken a 15-minute trip down to the courthouse to get a restraining order. Of course, that didn't happen. And, I mean, I've just never seen such an exhaustive list of everything that could possibly contribute to the feeling that it was a murder-suicide. And maybe it was. I wasn't there, but it doesn't look like that to me because I'm a natural cynic. What does it look like to you?
I agree with you. I looked at probably the same reports that you looked at with plenty of police activity and dates and times and charges. All I want to say about that is, number one, we're talking about it's been in the last maybe 20 years that computers document every time you walk into the courtroom, you know, and file a complaint about anything. So even people out there who have had everything dismissed, you know, they can have a printout and they look guilty as sin because of, you know, just the computer trail that they've left behind. And I think that's kind of what came back to bite him in this situation where we don't get to hear, like, yeah, he was charged with this or a complaint was taken out, but it was dismissed or unfounded or whatever, you know. So we don't get to see any of that. It's just, to me, it was a complete pointing to the finger that it was painting the picture that he was off his rocker. But then you have to wonder, and in your case, where you talked to him personally and you know the man that was, you know, on the show with you. So it's a tough one. I really wish I could go to the location of the crime scene. That's really the way I work the best.
I wish there was some way that could be worked out. And I don't know, maybe we should put our heads together sometime off air and see if we can make that happen. Because
I would like to point out, you've given my website to people. There are two little videos on there that are pretty cute. One is like I did last August on your show, where I had, you know, people I'm giving readings to, but I kind of picked out the best of the best and put that in a little video and audio clip. The second one is a TV show I did that was on A&E called Psychic Search. And it was on the idea of taking me before a family, and all they would tell me is their son was missing. And two detectives were present. They'd worked on the case for 6 years. And when you watch that video clip on the website, I mean, I literally take them to the scene, and I could feel like I shot myself in the head, and, you know, I relived the whole scene. But the amazing part was, as we were on the highway passing the area where it happened, I had the caravan of, you know, the A&E crew pull over, and they immediately fired up the cameras and everything, and it was just like I was acting out what the suspect did.
Oh boy. And what was the what was there? I know they're going to want to see the video anyway, but what was the result?
Well, the result was the family that I went to, their son had been murdered by his best friend, and I thought that was the end of the case. What I didn't know is, after 6 years of investigation, you know, the police were still working on it, had him not listed as dead, but as a missing person, which is why they called me in to see if I could come up with some definitive answers to this. And the good thing is, at the end of the show, they actually closed the case and termed it a murder. The area where I took them to the area where the murder took place. But what I didn't know is I also took them back to the suspect's home, and it was near the home that the suspect was pulled over by police on totally different, like on minor drug charges, but he took his own life right in front of the police. And I didn't know any of that. So it was kind of odd that as we're going to his home, I have everyone pull over and reenacted the entire suicide that he did. And it was, from what I understand, even recorded on the police dash cam.
Wow.
In this case, by the way, I'd been up north and everything was happening with that part of it. Even though they suspected that's part of why he took his own life, when they when I gave the information that I gave out, it really just, it sewed it up completely to the point. And the detectives say right on the show that they took the case, and instead of having it a missing person, it's a closed case, and it is a murder.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you what, when we come back, can we talk a little bit about Sandy Hook? I never did see the the fellow that they had arrested. You know, who was running away, running through the woods. The last thing was he did a little cameo there and looked at the camera and said, "I didn't do it." And of course, nobody was there recording somebody asking him, "You did not what?" We'll go like mad here when we get back. Take a little break and come back with Chuck Bergman. Chuck Bergman, BERGMAN.com. Check out his website and stay with us. This is Coast to Coast AM. Interesting times, aren't they? Well, let's get right back to Chuck Bergman, the psychic cop. Let's take our quick little break so we can have a nice long chat with him from here to the top of the hour. Please stand by. Whitley Strieber's coming up in a little bit. We'll have a probing interview with Whitley. And that's it. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Chuck Bergman, what do you make of this? What do you make of the Sandy Hook incident?
Oh, man, my stomach turns to even think about that. It's so devastating to the families, to the children.
Yeah, and I'd just like to preface any comments that we make together with this. There's no insensitivity meant here whatsoever. When you become a father, you become a father to every child in the world. That's just kind of the way it is. But I want justice for these kids. If it can be found, wrongs cannot be made right. But I would like to know what was going on there, because a lot of it looked pretty creepy. I don't remember the last time a perp, or let's not even say a perp, let's just say a suspect, is given a little cameo where you can look at the TV camera of the news person and say, "I didn't do it," and then we don't see him or hear about him ever again. So I'm still looking at it.
I'm kind of in the dark about that part, too. Like, when did he take his life?
Well, not only that, but, I mean, did you see the footage from the helicopter, the news helicopter, this fellow running through the woods in half black, half camo, and the cops had him down on the ground, and they put him in the car, and he looks at the camera and says, "I didn't do it," and that was it. No further mention of this guy.
First thing I caught was he was in the front seat, which is...
odd.
Very odd.
Mm-hmm. When you were a policeman, did you put suspects in the front seat there with you?
Never. We were given an order that, you know, if they're under arrest, they're in the back seat and they're handcuffed, period.
Have you been up there, or do you have any plans to go up there at all?
I had no plans. It's funny you asked the question. I'm hesitating because I just had an officer from Connecticut that he was at my home a few days ago, and he actually, after everything happened, was guarding different families' homes, you know, to keep the press away and keep everything okay. But he was just telling me the feeling of even being part of all that part of it. He worked in a neighboring community where, they called in help from other departments to assist. He was just telling me how even going through town was so, everything was so still and quiet, and, you know, no one would speak.
Really? No one would speak. It doesn't surprise me. You know, the some of the people who survived the Benghazi incident over there, they haven't been brought anywhere near the public spotlight. They haven't had an opportunity to speak either. So I just, I don't know. I just see too much stuff going on here for it to be unrelated. It just seems to be a coordinated onslaught of. I don't really know what, just control, mostly psychological control. It just seems that whether you believe what comes over the mainstream media or not, really, once you're in a sober moment when you think about it, there's some sort of an automatic credibility to things that, for many people, to things that come over, well, you know, they couldn't possibly put this on television and broadcast all over the place if it weren't true, that there's a little bit of that, despite increasing cynicism toward mainstream media, that there is that lingering credibility thing that automatically goes with a news broadcast, or there must be some element of truth to it, or they couldn't possibly be permitted to broadcast. And I tell you what, that's propaganda at its best.
Normally, I would probably disagree with you, but I've had it happen to me more than once where news people totally took everything out of context. You probably wonder what I'm talking about, but I did work on one case as a fatal accident investigator. And when the local news up in the Boston area asked me, you know, if I had any comment, I just received a phone call from our chief, and he said, "It's under investigation, no comment." So I repeated that for the camera maybe 20 times while they got their take. Next thing I know, they turn the light off, they're winding up the cord to the microphone, and the guy's kind of kneeling down. But what I didn't notice was he had the huge, you know, camera pointed upward at me, and the onboard mic is still on, and he's rolling tape. And then the guy says to me, "Hey, what really happened here, Chuck?" Because I knew the guy, and it'd be like you and I talking. I said, "Well, this is what happened," and that's what they put on the news, even though I gave like 20 statements saying, "No comment, it's under investigation." I got tired of saying that to them. You know, I actually started laughing after about the 19th time I had to repeat it. But it really did damage the investigation that I was working on. And I almost got fired over it. So,
no kidding. You know, there's been a rash of persons in official capacities, from the head of the prison system in Colorado to I think a sheriff in West Virginia. You got the assistant district attorney, and then the district attorney and his wife, 2 months apart, killed down in Texas, down in Kaufman County. And I'm really kind of surprised, and in a way, sort of almost glad. This seems like the work of some pretty rough customers down there. But it would be very interesting for you to walk that parking lot where Mark Haas, the assistant DA, the first one to be assassinated. That would be very good. I'm really kind of surprised they haven't called you.
See, and something
at the same
like
time,
that,
I'd be a little worried about you going down there,
not knowing anything at all, and then all of a sudden, it's like I'll relive it, and I'll know what happened. If you could have seen the raw footage from the psychic search where I bent over at the waist, not even knowing why I'm doing it, putting my fingertips on my head, and I said, "Wow, everything's coming out of my head. What happened here?" And then when I say what I witnessed, they said, "You're standing on the right spot, and yes, that's what happened."
Chuck, I'm curious about something. The common thread is that you're most effective when you're at the scene, and I noticed that that you're heavily into the meditation thing, and I wondered, how does transcendentalism play into your investigations? Is there any, I mean, this is kind of a dumb question, but I'm gonna launch it anyway. I mean, is there a remote viewing aspect to what you do, or do you really pretty much need to be at the scene where the incident occurred, or with the family members, or with some, I mean, you need to be in close proximity, or can you do some of this stuff by remote, I guess is what I'm getting at?
I can do it by, you know, like remote. It's on the idea of remote viewing, yes, but there has to be a contact, like you said, a family member, or if I can get both, great. I know I did one that here in Florida that was all over the news. In fact, it ended up on the Dr. Phil show. And it was a very strange one. And everything that I told the people when I walked through, and they were taping me on a home camcorder, later turned out to be absolutely correct. And it was odd because it had to do with a death. And of all places, I, you know, as I'm walking through the area where it happened, I went right into the bathroom and pointed to the shower stall, the shower head. And I said, "This is where she was found hanging, and she didn't do it." And it was right on the money.
Really? That's extraordinary. Let me ask you something. Let's just slightly change gears here. Your book, The Everything Guide to Evidence of the Afterlife. I know there are a lot of people who will be interested in reading the whole thing, but what is some of the most glaring evidence to you, other than unraveling crimes that the officials can't get a handle on? You get a handle on them. What are the key components that point positively to the existence of an afterlife? I mean, what really grabs you? What,
John, for me, I'll tell you, I've been the kind of person, I remember, I have to step backwards a little in time, and earlier you were talking about the computer viruses and all that, and I go back to the day when the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64 first came out. Had to have one, had to own one, didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I thought if I buy this thing and take it home and learn how to program with it, you know, it's going to solve all of my problems and everything. It didn't even have a hard drive back then. They had a small tape drive. But I remember within about 2 months after getting it, I had written my own checkbook program so I could put checks in the printer and it would print the check and the check stub and all of that. So my point is with doing anything I do like that, it's like I want to break it down from ground level, work through it, figure out what it's really all about. I really want to understand it. And that's exactly what I did when I found out that communication with the other side was possible. And for me, it was it wasn't me going out looking for a meditation class or anything. I was simply driving in my car, and all of a sudden, we're two states away from where I live. We're on our way home, and I just simply turned to my wife and said, "Wow, a woman just died, and it's mm-hmm. a friend. It's not a family member. It's more of a friend and an older lady, and it was very peaceful. And she's got a message for you. She's saying, take the day off. Thank you." And my wife looks at me like I'm crazy. However, we get home and there's a voicemail from her best friend saying that her mom passed away. And then I find out my wife was going to sit with this lady, you know, on the next day, Sunday, while her daughter went Christmas shopping. So when I played back the audio tape, you know, the little cassette tape we had back in the day, the timestamp was 2:30. So that was kind of strange. And that started it for me. And because it started, I got very inquisitive and wanted to know, is this for real or am I imagining it? Is it a lucky guess? What is it? And then like I talk about in the book, when I sat at home here in Florida and did a phone reading for a family in California who were giving up searching for their son after 8 months of not finding him, not knowing if he's dead or alive. And I literally pinpointed it on a map for them. And 24 hours later, the police were able to go to that location, but they had to use a helicopter to get there. And then they had to use all-terrain vehicles to go up and remove the body, but they did find it 24 hours. And how I did that over a telephone, I'm in Florida, they're in California. You know, I've never been to California. So I needed proof like that before I'd really buy into it, I guess.
You know, this is fascinating, and it prompts a couple of questions. Are there, other than the actual experience, do you have a profile of the type of personality or the kind of person or the intellectual level or whatever it might take to be able to do what you do? And can what you do be taught, or does it have to come to a person naturally? Do they have to work it out, or can they be guided to this art, this skill?
You know, you get different answers to that very question. And my personal feeling is, I'd have to say the living proof for me is my older sister has spent plenty of times with me going to, she was there the day I started developing when after I started getting these messages and everything. And she was with me my first meditation, and she tried meditation. She's been trying very, very hard next to me to make it happen for herself, and nothing. So I, to me, that kind of answers it. So not everyone can do this, no matter how hard they try. They may or may not be able to do it. I think I look at it as like being able to play the piano. Most of us can play chopsticks, and I can barely play that. And yet look at other people. They practice, and look how they make beautiful music. And so I feel it's partial gift.
How much of it is deductive reasoning?
For the stuff I do, I have to keep the reasoning out of it. Every time I keep the reasoning and I go logical while I'm doing a reading for a person, I blow it. It's all about, it's almost like I turn my brain off and if you can imagine like a twin next to me, you know, taking over and giving information and handing it over to the brain, it's like, that's what I have to do. I have to shut down almost, are almost like a mini nap or something. But I've got my own little techniques where I can go into this zone where I'm not thinking anything, and all of a sudden I'll see a vision or hear a sound, or I'll feel like I've got a laceration on my arm. You know, it can be any number of things. Sometimes it'll even be like a taste in my mouth, and it could be alcohol, it could be peanut butter, it could be something like that, and there's always a reason for it.
Sorry, I'm playing with my notebook here. Well, let me ask you this. Now, what was the most profound... What was the most profound case that you were involved in, and did it require you to, you know, sort of like Gandalf the wizard said, you know, I had to rest for 6 moons after that one, you know, after what he did for Uther Pendragon, he had to rest up, or maybe it was 9 moons. Do you have to recover from this?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes I'll do, here in the area, I'll do like group readings. I did one recently here at my home where I had... probably around 10 people. And, you know, if you're spending, say, 20, 30 minutes minimum with each person and bringing through their family members and all the stuff that you're doing, the next day, sometimes it's almost like you're taking, have you ever taken a test that's really complicated and you're spending a couple of hours on it? And when you're done with the test, your brain is mush. It has to rest. It has to take a break. And that can happen to me.
Well, what are you working on now that you can talk about?
At the moment, I've just been doing pretty much private groups, private readings. And, you know, there is something I'd love to talk about. It has to do with, are you ready? Civil War.
I'm ready.
I can't, though. It is
gotcha.
A reason for the silence here, but I went to a location... last weekend. I was there for a few days, and I'm allowed to say this part. The area I went to, and I didn't know they would do this back in the day. I'm just not into the history or the Civil War. But when we got out there, I literally looked up in a tree and I said, why are these soldiers hanging in trees up here? And at that point, it was an area where soldiers were tied to the trees to warn people coming over the water, don't enter, you know, or this will happen to you too. It was like a scare tactic, but I'd never heard of that.
Wow, absolutely heinous. Say, what do you make of our chances of actually having an incident with our buddy Kim Jong-un over there in North Korea? You have any thoughts on that?
I wish I could pull the tape on it. I was giving a lady a reading probably 2 months ago. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away about her, but her partner, her lover, was he was so well known that he's been profiled on 60 Minutes several times. And when I was giving her the reading, that whole topic came up about and it was coming from him, you know, in the spirit world. While I'm talking to her, I said, I don't know why I have to talk about, you know, the missiles and this part of the country being destroyed. And I went on and on and on, and I said, I don't know why he's talking about this stuff, but then it was weird to hear it all coming to fruition, you know, like 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I've got the raw footage on that where I would be able to, I should listen to it now, knowing what I know now. It would be an eye-opener, I'm sure. And she was a little disappointed. She wanted to hear him just say, I love you and stuff like that, but he was giving us a lot of advice, and at the time, I thought, this is ridiculous. Why am I even, you know, repeating all this? But I think I'm going to pull that one and check it out.
A lot of advice?
Oh, yeah, about who's doing what and what part of the country would be hit first. I'm trying to think from the top of my head. He did mention, like, what part of our country would be struck first. But I'm not, you know, I'd have to play it back again. I'd like to get that correct. If I'm going to do it, I'll pull the tape on it and listen to it again.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got nothing but 4 hours here to play and do those little mind things that we do. So why don't we plan on getting back together at some near point in future after you review that stuff, and let's just get a read on it. Provided, of course, nothing happens on the 11th, because the 10th, that's Wednesday, is supposed to be, a fairly critical spot on the calendar for April. A lot of people are concerned, and all this stuff is ramping up all over the world, in the Philippines, all over. I mean, I mentioned that the Russians are just finished flexing their triceps a little bit with their simulated cruise launches out of backfire bombers against American targets in Asia. So I don't know, is this old Texas guy named JB used to say, it almost seems as though we're being postured for a tube shot.
Ouch.
Well, that could mean going down the tube. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Chuck, it's a pleasure to have you on the program, and I want you to come back soon. Get back into that, and let's get back together for an update here in the next week or two. Can we do that?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks a lot. That is Chuck Bergman. His books, The Psychic Cop. The other one is The Everything Guide to Evidence of the Afterlife. And his website is chuckbergman.com. Chuck, BERGMAN.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the one and only Whitley Strieber on the one and only Coast to Coast AM.